Well, some of you may know that I work part-time as a hospital chaplain. Most of my shifts are on-call, which means that I carry a pager around during the normal off hours, holidays, weekends, overnights. My on-call shifts are typically between 16 and 24 hours long, and while I don't always get called in, I do always have to be ready. During these shifts, I mostly go about my normal life. I have dinner with my family, I run errands, sometimes I even attend meetings or events. But no matter what I'm doing, my bag is always packed. Even if it's Saturday morning and I'm just relaxing at home, I have my hospital uniform and my badge ready. I've made sure the car has gas and that no one has taken my keys. There's no way for me to know when my pager will go off, but I know that when it does, I have to be ready, because within 30 minutes of those piercing tones, I will be in the emergency room, or the intensive care unit, or at someone's deathbed, helping to walk a patient and their family through the crisis of their life. But at bedtime, when I'm getting ready to go to sleep, that's when I really have to level up my readiness game. Because it's hard to move urgently when you're fast asleep. So before I get into bed, I double and triple check that my clothes are laid out, that I've left my shoes somewhere that I can easily find them in the dark, that my coat and my hospital badge are right by the door so I don't wake anyone up looking for things on my way out, that really no one has taken my keys, and above all else, that my pager is turned on loudly enough that I will hear it, that it will wake me up no matter how deeply asleep I am. Even on the nights that I don't end up getting paged in, it's hard for me to sleep very well when I'm on call because I keep waking up, checking to make sure that my phone settings are set to disturb me. Even while I'm asleep, there's a part of me that is watching and ready and waiting because if the pager does go off, I need to somehow pull myself out of slumber, make a lucid phone call to the hospital supervisor, and then drive myself to work within minutes. There have been a couple of times when a colleague of mine has missed a middle of the night page entirely. And it's hard to say for sure what's gone wrong. Did they have their pager in the wrong setting? Did they just sleep through it? Did something go wrong on the hospital side of things? Our team puts our heads together to try to figure out what went wrong because we don't want it to happen again. If we consistently fail to show up, we'll lose our jobs. Being dressed and ready, alert and waiting, even in the middle of the night, that is the job. I thought about this in today's passage because Jesus is more or less telling his followers that we are all on call. While the master is away, we need to be dressed and ready. The verses that we're looking at today are in the middle of a talk that Jesus has been giving. Our Bibles, and for the sake of time, our sermons, break his teachings into bite-sized chunks, but that's not actually how Jesus gives them. So let's back up for a moment and see what he's been talking about. At the end of Luke 11, Jesus has been confronting the Pharisees and religious leaders while he was eating dinner with them. And they're extremely upset. So Jesus left the building where they'd been eating, and when he stepped outside, Luke tells us that a crowd of thousands are gathering, so eager to see and hear Jesus that they're starting to trample each other. So take a moment to picture this scene. Inside the building, the religious leaders are fuming because they've just been painted as the bad guys. And outside, thousands of people are creating chaos and physical danger because they are so eager to see Jesus. And in the midst of all this, and you can skim through the first part of Luke 12 if you want to, follow along, Jesus turns and starts talking to his disciples. Somehow he finds a way to huddle them up and pass instructions on to his closest friends that he thinks is relevant and important in this chaotic moment. Jesus tells them not to be afraid, even if they are attacked and killed. And that's probably timely advice in this moment, given how hard-pressed they are on every side. He warns them not to spend their lives trying to store up wealth, but instead to invest their treasures in God's kingdom. He tells them not to worry even about having enough food to eat or clothes to wear, but actually instructs them to sell what they do have and place their hearts and their energy and their investment in God's kingdom. And then he tells them, be dressed and ready for service, and keep your lamps burning, like servants waiting for their master to return from a wedding banquet, so that when he comes and knocks, they can immediately open the door for him. In other words, in this highly charged and unpredictable moment, Jesus' concern for his followers is that they be dressed, that they be ready, and that they be doing what the master asked. So what does it mean to be dressed for service? My son Benjamin prefers vacations that start in the wee hours of the morning. He loves to pack the car the night before, then wake up at 4 a.m. and hit the road. If we're flying somewhere, his vote is for the 6 a.m. flight so that we can leave for the airport while it's still dark. For him, there is a sense of adventure in the middle of the night getaway. I personally prefer to start my vacations a little later in the day. But if we do plan to leave early, I definitely get the packing finished in advance, and I actually suggest to my kids that we just sleep in the clothes we're gonna leave in. Why change out of pajamas and curl your hair at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know? Just wear some shorts and a t-shirt, slip on sandals, and we'll figure things out when we get there. When Jesus said the words, be dressed and ready, he was echoing the instructions that were given to the Hebrew slaves in Egypt as they prepared for their trip out of slavery into the Promised Land. Way back in Exodus, God told Moses to tell the people that they were to be dressed and ready, to even eat their Passover feast standing up, with their traveling clothes on, their shoes already tied onto their feet, and a walking stick in their hands. It was go time. Wait for my signal. But we are not leaving on vacation, and we are not fleeing oppression, thank goodness. We're not even trying to navigate the chaotic dangers the disciples were facing that day. We are waiting for Jesus to come back and establish his kingdom on earth. And we have been waiting a very long time. So what should we be dressed in? In his letter to the Colossians, Paul writes, therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another if any of you has a grievance against someone. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. So here is at least part of our answer. We get dressed and ready by putting on compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience, bearing with each other, forgiveness, and over all of these, like an overcoat, we put on love. So friends, do these words describe us? Is this what we look like? Do we take the time and effort every day to make sure that we are dressed in compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience, forgiveness, and love? I'm guessing that most of us have seen the Where's Waldo books that used to be in every classroom and daycare and doctor's waiting room. What makes Waldo hard to find, page after page, is that the artist has placed him in the midst of chaos. There are thousands of people and colorful objects, so finding this one guy in a red and white striped shirt and hat is tricky. But what's not hard is knowing what he looks like. As soon as we spot him, we know. None of us have met Waldo. He's a cartoon without much backstory. But we know he is going to be wearing blue pants, a red and white striped shirt, and he's going to be carrying a walking stick and a knapsack and a set of binoculars around his neck, whether he's at the airport or at the beach or at the mall. Friends, is it obvious to everyone in the world that Jesus' followers are the ones dressed in compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience, and love? That it might be hard to find us amid all the chaos and noise in the world, but absolutely easy to recognize us when we're spotted because of what we're wearing? In addition to being dressed, Jesus asks his followers to be ready, to keep our lamps burning so that when the master comes home, whenever that is, even in the middle of the night, we are ready to open the door. Today, I would probably just turn the porch light on and go to bed. Like Tom Baudet from Motel 6 used to say, we'll leave the light on for you. But in Jesus' times, there was no electric LEDs. Someone had to stay awake and manually keep that oil lamp burning. So for us today, I think Jesus' instructions are encouraging us to pay attention, to not get distracted. Jesus describes his return like a thief coming in the night. Of course, Jesus is not a thief per se. Satan is the thief. Jesus is breaking in to release the hostages, not to take hostages. Jesus is coming with his kingdom of shalom and justice to redeem back the people and his creation. But, like a thief, his timing is not what we expect it to be. Okay, this massive understatement hits differently now than it did 2,000 years ago. Jesus' friends expected his sudden release of hostages to come in their lifetimes. We see in Acts and throughout the letters to the churches that they were dressed and ready. They were waiting. They were watching. But for us, 2,000 years is a long time to wait. Anytime now, Jesus. It's easy to get discouraged and to say with the man in the parable, my master is taking a long time coming. So Jesus gives us one more command. Be busy doing what the master asked. After all, we aren't waiting for God to come and end the world. We are waiting for God to come and bring his kingdom of compassion and justice and shalom fully to earth as it is in heaven. So while we wait, we prepare the way. We spread the word. We do the work of the kingdom. And what has the master asked us to do? In this talk Jesus is having with his friends, surrounded by the dangerous adoring crowds and the dangerous religious people, he tells them not to worry about the dangerous things, about being killed, about not having enough food or clothes or security. He specifically tells his friends not to store up wealth, but to build up the kingdom. Invest in the kingdom of Jesus that is here and that is coming. Centuries before Jesus, the prophet Micah confronted the people for getting distracted, for losing the plot. God said through Micah, I've already shown you what to do. Do justice, love mercy, walk with God in humility. Or as the Message paraphrase puts it, God's already made it plain how to live and what to do. What God is looking for in men and women. It's quite simple. Do what is fair and just to your neighbors. Be compassionate and loyal in your love. And don't take yourself too seriously. Take God seriously. So that's a place for us to start, While we wait, we invest in God's kingdom, not our own. We stay busy doing justice, loving mercy, walking with God humbly. And Jesus famously claimed that all of God's law, all the things the Master wants us to be doing, can be summarized in two commandments. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. In one of the final stories Jesus told before his death, he asked his listeners to imagine a king on his throne acting as judge over the people. In this parable, Jesus describes the king separating everyone into two groups. One group, the king banishes. The other, he rewards with an invitation to come close to him. But people in both groups are confused. Why were we sorted the way we were? The king replied that his decision was based on who had offered him food when he was hungry, water when he was thirsty, clothes when he needed them, care when he was sick or in prison, shelter and welcome when he was a traveling stranger. But still both groups are baffled. When had they ever seen the Lord in such a state? The king replied, "Whatever you did for the least of my brothers and sisters, you did for me." In other words, that poor or sick or hungry or thirsty person you saw, the immigrant or the prisoner, that was the Master in disguise all along. So this, too, is what Jesus asks us to do while we wait for our Master to return. Anytime we see a fellow human in need, we act as though that person were God himself. I'm noticing a theme here between the Old Testament and the Gospel and the Epistles. How about you? What we are supposed to be wearing is what we are supposed to be doing. Justice, compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience, bearing with each other, forgiveness, and over all these, loving God and loving those around us. So how about it? Are we dressed? Are we ready? Are we busy doing the Master's work? And if we aren't, what might be stopping us? I do think that it's hard to take Jesus seriously about keeping our lamps burning when centuries have passed. It would be easier to not fear being killed, easier to not store up wealth for the future, easier to not worry if we'll have enough food for our kids if we really thought he was coming back this year or next. In many ways, I think we've been discipled by the servant in another parable who got scared while his master was gone for so long and buried his investment in the ground rather than risk losing everything. But friends, my reminder to you today, my reminder to myself, is that while we wait for Jesus to return, God is still here. God is here with us. In the past few weeks, we have seen just how victorious God is and will be over sin and suffering, over corruption in this world, even over death. We don't need to be afraid because God is here with us. So let's get dressed. Let's be ready. Let's work together to do what the Master has asked us to do. In closing, let me tell you one more story. A long time ago, when I was little, I was running around a country meadow with a group of friends. I can't remember exactly why we were there. There was probably a church picnic or an outdoor service project, and we kids had run off like kids do. What I do remember is that we were at the top of a green grassy hill and we could see for miles. And what we saw was this huge, glorious cloud in the sky. And just as it caught our attention, the sun broke through, sending shining golden rays of light everywhere. It filled the sky with majesty. And it looked exactly like all the pictures in our Bible storybooks of God's glory and heaven's kingdom and Jesus' return. One of my friends shouted, "Let's go meet Jesus!" And we raced down the hill. I don't think any of us thought Jesus was really coming back that day, but in our childish way, we were watching. And now a few decades later, a few thousand years later, is Jesus coming back today? Is today the day when God's kingdom comes, God's will be done on earth as it is in heaven? Maybe. Maybe not. But today is the day that we should get dressed and be ready. Be busy doing what our Master has asked us to do. And none of us can do this alone, so God calls us together. And brothers and sisters, I am so grateful to be on this mission of faithful waiting and watching and working with you. I'm going to close us in prayer as the choir comes up. And I want to begin my prayer by reading Paul's word one more time. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another if any of you has a grievance against someone. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. Jesus, we are your servants, and we submit our lives to you. We are getting dressed, and we are ready. We wait for you. May you find us busy working for you when you arrive. And may your kingdom come and your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Amen.